Larry McCarron along with head coach Mike McCarthy. And Mike, certainly a big week. Game plan, practice, family at home. Was there a single thing you look at the best part of the week?
The first podcast with Larry McCarron. The highlight of the week. I mean, I canceled all the offensive meetings today and canceled the special teams to make sure we had time to do the podcast. So I know you and I are both trying to figure out what a podcast is, but here we go. No, it's been a good week. Kids are back at school. Jack's got a big game Saturday. George had a big game last night, so he played really well. And girls are going to see Taylor Swift in Minneapolis, so they're happy. So, and I get to go to Chicago, so the McCarthys are having a great week.
When you go to the kids' games, are you coaching in your mind, or are you just enjoying their experience? How do you deal with that?
Enjoying the experience, but obviously taking note of everything they're doing because, both boys are very inquisitive and, they want feedback and they want to be coached, per se. But, it's a lot of fun. I mean, it's just like anything. Going through with Alex when she played soccer, I mean, just to see your kid out there competing, it's awesome.
Well, speaking of this kind of stuff, how about Mike McCarthy, the coach, telling me about Mike McCarthy, the all-conference tight end at Baker University?
Couldn't stay. His availability wasn't good enough, is what I'd say about that young man. He's, we ran an option offense. We ran it very well. We had great backs, the years I was there. But I could really run, catch. But, we used primarily as a blocker. We had really good receivers. Actually, our one receiver went on to have a great career in arena football, George LaFrance. Had a quarterback that could throw it, throw it a mile. But, it was an option offense. So it was a lot of fun. We won a lot of games, played the national championship game my senior year. But, I enjoyed it. But, of course, could I have played in that NFL? Of course I could. Just like anybody else that went through college that got hurt. Too many knee injuries.
Hey, you mentioned blocking. Were you a go-for-the-throat type blocker guy?
This is true story. We were playing the game, Baker University versus Mid-America Nazarene. I was blocking on an outside zone type play, and the referee threw the flag on me, and I'm like, what the hell did I do? So I ran off to the sideline after the series was over, and I said, what was the coach was like, what the hell are you doing? I said, what was the penalty? I didn't understand the call. He said you had hands to the face. I says, I've been blocking like that my whole life. That's a little bit of product playing Division II football. I didn't know that was illegal. I mean, I thought that's what you're supposed to do. So, I was a pretty good blocker.
Let's talk about the Green Bay Packers a lot, I suppose. Your 10th season, your 10th Packer team, and every team is a little different. And what I'd like to ask you, do you like this team? And I'm not talking about its ability to run and jump. I'm talking about its collective personality, kind of its football soul. Do you like this team?
No, I really like it a lot. That's really the things you get in touch with more and more as you work in the NFL. It's about people. It's about the collection of people and how they're connected and the forces that they can build, as they move forward of attaining, the ultimate goal. So, obviously, winning is what makes the flow and the growth of your culture go this time of year. But what a fine collection of players and coaches. And so from that point of view, we definitely have the right stuff.
Now, Mike, I've heard you say that conflict is good. And that's good because you're probably going to disagree with this. But this season, you're going for your fifth straight division title, unprecedented in Packers history. Seven straight playoff berth. Only one other team is doing that this season in the entire National Football League. And it is my humble opinion, this is what you're going to disagree with. Super Bowls are wonderful, but this is such a tough league. an even bigger challenge, to me anyway, is winning and winning big all the time. And that's what you guys have done. I think that is damn difficult.
You know, when you step back and you look what's been done the last 9 years, I mean, it's definitely a very high level of success, and it really goes back to the philosophy when Ted and I started this together. Is it was to build a championship program, you know, to build the program the right way that was going to put us in position, you know, obviously with some good fortune and the touch of God's hands, you know, particularly in the area of health, and you know, have maybe the ball bounces your way, you know, once or twice, but just put yourself in position to win championships. So, you know, we've been able to win some division championships, been able to win the Super Bowl once, but you know, that part of it's in place, but more importantly, the players, you know, have bought into it, and I can honestly say every year when they've come back from the prior year, there's been something new that's been added to our program, a new emphasis, or you know, facility-wise. So there's a constant, continuous commitment from the organization to give us the opportunity to create the culture and put ourselves in position to have very good football teams. But you know, but the reality of it, and you know this better than anybody, you have to go play the games, and you got to win the games, and that's really the toughest part about it. And it's tough winning on the road, and division games we've always put the most time into, and always felt that they're the biggest challenges are clearly our division games, and this one being on the road is obviously a huge challenge. So, but we feel good about the program, but ultimately it's time to go play football.
Mike, coming into the season, you changed your role. Do you like it? You know, kind of the bigger picture situation for you. Do you like it?
I love it, actually, because I like challenges. It's been a bigger challenge than I thought it was going to be. But you know, the flow. I'm really looking forward to getting into a flow, and that's what I spend all my time doing, trying to organize and schedule and so forth, make sure the football team's in the flow. So, but just to get into the individual flow, and after this week it'll flow, because the first week's always a little disjointed. You got to make the personnel decisions there Saturday and Sunday, and it kind of carries over into Monday, and you start a day earlier for the team and so forth. So, but I'm really enjoying it. I'm doing a lot of work. You know, a lot of my work is really focused on us, you know, self-scout, how do we look, making sure we're hitting the targets. I always felt our practice environment was excellent, so I'm even trying to improve that because I think it could be better. So we did some things in the training camp, new drills, and you know, the way we're flipping the practices around. You know, we're listening to our data. You know, whether it's the GPS, the nutrition, and things like that, and all those components are fluid as I make decisions to continue to find the best way to train the football team.
Are all those things that you just listed, are they part of the analytics picture? You've mentioned that word, and I'm not sure I know exactly what it means in a football sense, but are those things what analytics are all about?
Well, analytics is really a component in how deep can you really go, you know, with your analytics into your program, and I think anybody that's uses it in any business platform or any industrial platform, the starting point is data. You know, it's the collection of data, the cleanness of the data. So that's where all the work comes in, and that's very difficult for football coaches because you have history, you have more than one language in house and things like that. So I mean, it's a lot of work. So I've gone into this with my eyes wide open. I'm doing it in steps. So that's why we've taken some steps this year. We're going to take, you know, bigger steps, you know, after the season and so forth. But it's all about that fight and that drive to be better, you know, to make sure that we're giving our players all the ammunition they need to be successful on Sundays.
Another goal you've stated at some point in the offseason or during training camp, as you talked about raising your team's football IQ. And the first thing that comes to my mind, don't do dumb things during a game or something like that. Is there more to it than that, or is that what you're talking about with that? What's going on with there?
Absolutely. It's just, I think if everybody would take a step back and you look at the talent of your organization, and particularly as I look at football operations, and you know, having a personnel department involved in a meeting on Monday nights, more in depth to get their input on some things, having coaches, we have a few coaching principles that we live by. One of them is, you know, across the hall. So we're doing a lot more times with coaches across the hall. Now that's even been extended to the players. So it's just trying to educate the players from as many different angles about the little things, because everybody coaches fundamentals. You can go on YouTube and find fundamental teaching tapes that are phenomenal. There's really no secrets here, but it's really the little things. And when we used to coach quarterbacks, we always talked about the system of football, the offensive system of football, then the cheat system, the ability to where's the corner you can cut, where's the tip that you're looking for, that little extra that's going to give you an edge on a play or a certain scheme versus. And we're really doing that now throughout our whole football team. And it's been great. The players love it. They're into it. And it's just giving them different filters to look at themselves by, giving them different thought process to be aware that, hey, this is how your opponent's looking at you. You know, so that when you watch the tape, say, hey, I'm going to play in the three technique. Okay, when I'm in a tight three, I'm doing this, this, and this. And when I'm in a wide three, I'm doing this. So, I mean, you got to just really knuckling it down. And you know, it's really our job, but it's just educating these guys, because the league is so much younger. You know, you played a long time in the league. You know, there's things you learn over, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7 years, and you go, geez, man, I wish I knew this 5 years ago. Well, we don't have 5 years, so we're trying to get that 6, 7, 8 year experience into these young guys, and you know, the older guys, you know, we openly challenge them to take an active role in the development of the younger players, because it's the best thing for the team. I mean, it's not where everything we do is in the best interest of the team. So it's just find as many different ways to continue to educate everybody, myself included. I mean, there's things that I learn when I go to a defensive meeting. I go, okay, yeah, that makes sense. A little more clear than I thought. And it's also, you know, my input to them offensively. And then even going back to the offensive meeting, just say, hey, you know, that's not exactly how you think they're looking at you. So it's just a lot more banter through all three phases of the offense, the defense, and the special teams. And because the good teams play to each other, the great teams are totally in sync with each other, all three phases, and that's obviously our goal.
Mike, earlier you mentioned your practices. Now, I've been watching practices forever, like decades. And your practices, just quite frankly, they run like a Swiss watch. I mean, they are precise, organized, efficient, everything you want them to be. You mentioned your team's culture. Locker room culture is excellent. We've talked about the results that you've gotten on game day. All those things are functions of leadership. And here's another thing you will probably disagree with, because I'm disagreeing with Vince Lombardi. Vince Lombardi said leaders are made, they're not born. Okay, I don't think that. I think you either got that knack or you don't. Now, as a leader of this operation, what do you think?
I disagree with you and Vince Lombardi, Coach Lombardi. I don't think it's black and white. I think every individual is born with a certain level of ability to enhance leadership, and leadership comes in different levels, and you see it on a football team all the time. So when a rookie has an opportunity, what are his leadership opportunities? Well, how about standing out into the drill work, making a play in the game, you know, and then, hey, maybe jump to the front of the line in the drill. So so my point is example, you know, his leadership opportunities of example. And then he creates credibility. So then from that, you know, he has a chance to grow. So I think leadership is something that you have to develop. You have to you have to foster, you have to educate, you have to promote. I spend a lot of time, and it's really from my experience the first couple years, because I'm not saying we had bad leadership in the early years. We had too much structured leadership, and it was really formal leadership. You know, you're the 7-year veteran. You know, what are you going to do? We're going to follow you. You know, you played 20 years. What are you going to do? We'll follow you. I mean, it's all, you know, it's formal based off of, you know, how many years in the league or how many Pro Bowls you've accomplished. That's not enough, especially when your football team is a young team year in and year out. So where do you create the informal leadership opportunities, you know, in the locker room, maybe giving a young man a chance to call up the team, which usually goes to the veterans. We have 3 captains each and every week. That's, once again, trying to spread that opportunity through the whole locker room. You know, we do something very, very unique before pregame, and this is really from my thought process of trying to generate leadership moments. You know, I'll have a quote from the Bible that is tied to our theme of the week, and then we'll say the Our Father, and then I'll call one of the 3 captains to the middle of the locker room. And with that, you know, a player is the last one that his final comments are what we come together on before we got out on the field. I mean, as a head coach, I mean, you know, that's hard to give up, you know, because you want to bring your team out. We're going to fly out the door together, but the players play the game. And that's something that I've always respected. And I think it's really the respect that I've learned, not being an NFL player and realizing as a young coach in the NFL that NFL players just want you to make them better. At the end of the day, you know, the former NFL player gets, you know, he walks into the room with some credibility as opposed to a guy that hasn't played. That's true, but the fact of the matter, when push comes to shove, they want the guy that's going to teach them how to play. You know, he's going to make me a better player. So, but out of respect, you know, I thought, man, this is a very natural thing to do. You got one of your own, you know, one of the 46 that have the privilege to dress and wear the G on their helmet that's going to take our team out the tunnel. So, and it's a great leadership moment, and it's gotten better and better and better every year that we've done it. So things like that, and that's because a big part of our development as a team, I think, has really been the development of our leadership, and it comes on different levels. So I think everybody has a certain ability, and the great ones get a chance probably earlier in life than others. They get, like anything in life, they're good at it, and they're able to foster it, and they're able to create credibility and build off of that, and their leadership level goes to a very high level.
Mike,
well, that was a long answer, wasn't it?
It was a good answer. Mike, do you sometimes get surprised? Like, I suppose because of a guy's persona, personality, you kind of think, well, he's going to be like this. But when you give him the shot at being in front of the team, are you sometimes surprised with what guys come up with and how they respond to that situation?
All the time. It's like going out. To me, it's very comparable to the old bull in the ring game. You know, you throw a guy in there.
There's an old drill.
Yeah, you throw a guy right in the middle of bull ring, and you may not think he has something. All of a sudden, you go, holy mackerel, this guy, you know, this guy's got some pop to him. I think it's like anything in life. When you're thrown into the middle of the arena and your peers are locked eyeball to eyeball with you, what do you have? And what it does is it makes every man open up their chest and give a part of themselves that they're not really comfortable with. And they may not do it as good as they like the first time, but the second time it's more comfortable, you know, the third time. And so I've seen it grow over time where when guys just let go and be themselves, man, it's such a powerful thing. And it doesn't even matter what they say, it's how they say it, you know. And that's a key in communication, and it's a key in motivation. And you have to have that to be a leader.
Mike, this past off season, you made a big change in the coaching staff with Ron Zook moving from assistant to special teams coordinator. And I was wondering, I would think a coaching staff is kind of a team within a team, okay? And much like the guys on a team, the coaches know who the real deal guys are or not. And you work with Ron Zook in New Orleans. Did that have a big influence your experience with him, knowing what he's about as a coach and a guy, did that have a big influence on you hiring Rob Zook?
Oh, no doubt about it. I knew how competitive he was, and that was a good staff in New Orleans. You know, Ron was in the room on defense, and you know, it's his first time being a defensive coordinator in the NFL, and it was my first time being an offense coordinator. But Ron had I think three other former defensive coordinators in his room. So I mean, he was really in a different environment. But he was so dang competitive on the field. So I always liked the fact that he had to manage his assistant coaches, his staff a lot differently than I did, because I brought an offense to New Orleans and this is what we were going to run and so forth. So I didn't have the challenges that he had. So I always admired him for that, because that's tough, especially when these guys have more experience than you and so forth and so forth. So I thought that was a really unique quality of his. And coaches get carried away in spring and training camp, and he was top of the list. So he was competitive, and which is a lot of fun. And players feed off of that. We won the first playoff game in the history of the Saints, and it was a lot like our 2010 team. I think Ron was, I think they're on their sixth and seventh cornerback. I mean, we had a ton of injuries, and even going into the playoffs, we had our starting five linemen were the only starters we had on offense. The whole perimeter was backups. So it was a great experience. And then he went on to be a head coach, and that in itself is, as you know more than ever, is an incredible experience, and it brings a lot of value. So Ron has a lot to offer to our football team.
While we're on coaches, there's two names that consistently come up when you talk about where you come from. And the two names that I hear a lot are Paul Hackett and Marty Schottenheimer. Are those the key figures in your growth and really becoming the coach you are today?
Definitely. I mean, I think every coach that you're around affects your life. I really go back to, I just had it, had to write a note to, my baseball and basketball coach back in Greenfield. He's going into his 52nd year. I mean, think about that. He's coached three generations of youth, in the city of Pittsburgh, the neighborhood of Greenfield. I mean, he's coached your grandfather, your father, and yourself. I mean, it's remarkable. And he made an impact on my brother Joe and I. I mean, Jim Gregg, he was a warden in Allegheny County Jail. That was his day job, and he coached baseball and basketball, for the last 50 years. So, I mean, he's made an impact. I played for a great high school basketball coach, Fran McGee Mannion. Phenomenal. He really taught me how to compete, frankly. I mean, he got the best out of everybody. A loving Irishman that would give you the shirt off his back. Him and his brother Larry and his two sisters, the whole family dedicated their lives to the Catholic Church. They taught in Catholic schools. He taught he was the head basketball coach in our high school from the day it opened to the day it closed. Just things like that. So I played for a great college coach in Charlie Richards, and then went on to, had a chance to be with Mike Godfrey for a year there at Pitt. Had a unique opportunity out at Fort Hays State with John Vincent. So you got a guy to let you do things. So all these people, you take something from it. But Jim Hazard was a great guy to work for, and the opportunity he gave me, and even Ray Rhodes. I was kind of the outsider that was hired on that staff in '99. I didn't really have any relationships or connections to that group, but being with Paul for 9 years, he taught me so much about, taught me the quarterback position. I mean, that's where really I learned that from. And I was able to learn that, the quarterback position, while Alex Van Pelt was playing the 4 years at Pitt. So, I mean, think about the irony of that. But Paul's just a great football mind. He's just the way he dissects the game and his organization skills and I always think, when I think of Paul, I think of thought process, because there's always a way and a process to do everything, that whether it's the fundamentals, whether it's the schemes, all of that. And then Marty, to me, was the ultimate structure person. Build a program. It's got to stand for something. You got to have an identity. You got to you know, your work, you know, your work ethic has to show up in, you know, these areas. And he was so passionate, you know, almost to a fault. You know, you could have the worst idea in the world, and if you went in there and you sold that thing like, you know, we're gonna, you know, and he'd stop listening to the facts of it halfway through. But he was so tied into the fact that this thing meant so much to you, you know, he'd jump in there with you. Now he may, you know, wake up the next day and say, hey, you know something, that's not gonna work. But the chance I thought about, but he was so passionate about the game of football, and really, you know, about life. You know, you can see just the way he, his family, his wife Pat, and so forth. So yes, you know, Paul and Elizabeth Hackett and Marty and Pat Schottenheimer both had a major impact in my life.
Mike, you were mentioning your grade school coach and things like that. Now, you told a story one time. Another influence, a big influence on your life is your pop, certainly, your dad.
Ooh, that's a couple podcasts there.
Could you retell the story about some kid was waxing you in basketball your dad wouldn't give you the easy way out?
Bernie Slobodniak, one of the Slobodniak boys. I think I had five boys and they had one sister, but Bernie was a couple years older than me, you know, just big old gangly guy. And, you know, we lived in Pittsburgh, so the houses were all next to each other, and kind of, you know. So my dad pulls in the backyard. He's coming home from work, and we're in the yard next, and we're playing a basketball game. And so I see, you know, when he pulls in from work, it's time to go. You gotta go eat dinner, you know. So, he walks right in, and then, you know, Bernie and I get in this, you know, altercation, whatever. Bernie kind of throws me against the wall, and you know, kind of grabs me. Then he sees my father, and he says, you know, oh, I said, you know, sorry, Mr. McCarthy. And I'm like, you know, all dangled happy that my dad's there. So I go to climb over the fence to go to dinner, and he's standing down on the other side of the fence. He says, where are you going? I says, it's time to eat now. He says, you get back over that fence. And, you know, Bernie's like, hey, because, I mean, like I say, he's an older and bigger kid. He's, hey, Mr. McCarthy, there's no need to do this. And I'm like, I remember just kind of half closed my eyes and just went in there and went for it. And he kicked the dog out of me. And then, you know, by the time we were done fighting, I looked up, my dad had gone in there and started eating. So, yeah, it's, you know, and then, you know, I go in the kitchen, you know. So he gave me a little air for after that when I got in the house.
Tough love right there.
Oh, yeah.
Now, Mike, I can always tell you, you take pride in being from Pittsburgh.
Absolutely.
You got some Pittsburgh pride there. And when we were there this summer, you know, there's a toughness to the people, but they're nice tough. But I wanted to ask you about, and this place was recommended by Alex Van Pelt, an Italian restaurant where you go and they have great Italian food, but they don't serve drinks. And if you want a drink, they say, just go down the street at a bar, and the bar load up a bucket of beer. Have you ever eaten there? And they act like this is normal, that you walk a block down the street get your beer.
BYOB, right? bring your own bottle. Frankly, it probably relates to some of the, you know, the older times. I mean, liquor licenses were hard to get, and I just know my father being in a bar business. If you had a liquor license, they're like gold, and if your liquor license gave you the opportunity to open up on Sundays, man, that was, you know, that was platinum. So, I mean, it was a big time deal. So I'm sure that, frankly, I don't remember what the mechanics of it are, but yeah, that's common there.
Mike, of course, got the Bears, and I thought it'd be, I think it's been interesting this week, Mike, getting back to the game, is the rivalry, it's huge and so forth. But I've heard you say it, and I hear it throughout the locker room. Yeah, the rivalry is great. However, we have got a game to play, a game to win, a start to make fast, and it's a step along the way. The rivalry itself is kind of icing on the cake, but the game and the victory is the cake for you guys.
Absolutely. And everybody that works here, you know, especially even, you know, as far as the players and coaches specifically, I mean, we all take great pride and recognize the history and the tradition of the Packers and obviously the tradition of this rivalry, and it's great. I mean, it's just more energy that's thrown into the one contest. But, you know, when we get to the stadium and our guys get ready to go, we need to warm up the right way. We need to go through, you know, the process of pregame and make sure we're ready to go. But we play hard all the time. You know, we're going to lay it out there all the time. So, and that's really what we got to stay focused on. We just got to really stay focused on our process. No disrespect to any of our opponents, but you know, by the time we get to game day, we really don't care about them or what they're going to do. We're going to go out. We're going to play our game, and we're going to impose our will and empty our bucket, you know, schematically on our opponent, and we feel really good that the result will be in our favor.